welcome to the Labrador podcast from Tales of Success Labrador Training. Thanks for joining me on this episode. I'm joined by Sophie, who's going to be talking about her three-year-old male Labrador called Cooper. We're going to be chatting about her experiences of training and living with a young dog and the many ups and downs that come along with that. Sophie, hello, and thanks for joining me in this episode. You've got some great stuff to talk to us about. So let's dive straight in and hear about the main man. So tell us about your fur friend, how old he is, and what sort of life this little prince leads.
Cooper's almost three in June. We live in Devon, so we are constantly on the beach and in the sea and paddleboarding and surfing.
Cooper is a typical lab. He loves his food and he also loves fetching balls. He would literally go all day without stopping, I think, if we let him. He's like just the best adventure buddy. He just comes everywhere with us. Like I said, he loves swimming, paddleboarding, just long walks and hikes. But he's also like the biggest snuggly baby. Like, he loves a cuddle. He is literally a 26 kilo lap dog. He's ridiculous. He's really goofy. He's a bit of an idiot as well sometimes.
So I think he lives his best life.
We'd all like to live that life because it sounds really good. What colour is he?
He's fox red Labrador.
Okay, so fox red, guessing then he's from working line or show lines? Working?
Yeah, working, yes.
Okay. Does he do any working as such, or is he absolutely living his best life at the sea just as a great family pet?
He is just our family pet, but I do a bit of gun dog training with him, just to get his brain working and get him doing what he was bred to do, basically.
Yeah. What are his favourite things to be doing? Where would you say that Cooper is at his very happiest?
I mean, he absolutely loves when we're out training and doing his retrieving, but I'd say his happiest is when we're all in the sea together swimming around, and he just swims backwards and forwards between me and my partner Bill, and he would just swim and swim forever.
So I guess kind of living in Devon is the absolute perfect place for this dog then.
Yeah, I would say so.
How long have you had Cooper?
We got him in August 2020.
Okay. So he's coming up to 3 years old.
Yeah.
Is this your first experience of having a dog? Have you got history of dogs before he came along?
No. So we've both always had dogs. I've always had border collies, really. And then Bill's had smaller dogs like Jack Russells and things. So we've both always had dogs growing up and in the family, but it's our first. Cooper's our first dog who is solely dependent on us.
So a working line Labrador is very, very different from probably the smaller dogs that Bill is used to. Probably more similar to a collie with the kind of working kind of traits that they have. How have you found a Labrador in comparison to a collie or the smaller dogs that Bill's used to?
They are quite similar, like you say. They're very high energy and they want to be on the go all the time, but it is different having your own dog, which you need to do all the training and everything else that comes with it. It's not just a little friend to play with as and when you want to.
Do you think you would have done things differently? So the collies that you grew up with, you probably were there as their playmate, right?
Yeah.
And then you had this full responsibility of like actually caring for a dog. Going back 2.5 years when you got him, do you think you'd have approached it a bit differently knowing what you know now?
Yes and no. I've obviously, Cooper's got his own Instagram account. I have learned a lot through Instagram, just some sort of opinions on training and like things like letting him just say hello to whatever dog in the park, or you know, like on lead greetings we used to let him do, which I don't anymore. Things like that. Going to the dog park, we have one literally around the corner, and we thought it was the best thing ever when we first got Cooper, being so close. Now I can't remember the last time I stepped foot in there, because it's just carnage.
So we've mentioned dog parks. I think it's really important to try and explain a little bit more around that, because dog parks are a huge thing for a lot of people, particularly I would say in the States. Dog parks are more of a thing there, so it's the place where you take your dog to exercise off lead, and it's they go and have the best time. Here in the UK, where we're based, then probably not official dog parks, but we all know the places where the other dogs are going to hang out. And lots of people go there to let their dogs run around, exercise, and have a whole host of fun. But they can become like the place where your dog goes to hang out and just learn bad habits from other dogs. So is that kind of what you're referring to about why you avoid them? Or is there another reason that you found?
No, it's exactly like you said. We used to take Cooper from being a pup, and that was his sort of, mainly his everyday, you know, just around the block sort of walk. And he, as he was getting older and into like adolescence, he just thought he owned the place. Anywhere else, his training was really good and he would listen, but in the park, he was just like, no, this is my place. I'll do what I want and I won't listen to you, basically. There was quite a few dogs in there who weren't exactly the nicest. Don't get me wrong, we did meet quite a few nice people and knew and like owners and things like that. And obviously it was lockdown too, so it was quite nice to be able to speak to people. But yeah, like I say, when he started hitting around 6-7 months, we were just like, no, this is not the place.
And it is tough because it's lovely to see dogs running around together and enjoying themselves. But a lot of youngsters will then think that every dog is there to be played with all the time. So when they do see another dog and they happen to be, I don't know, in the high street and on lead, straight away in their head, they think, right, that's a dog. I play with dogs. I have fun. So it can create this just whirlwind of excitement every single time they see a dog, because they think back to that moment in the park where it's just total fun and carnage every single day. Did he have any bad experiences at the park other than maybe being too excited? But did he ever get any bites or attacked or anything like that from some other dogs?
Not in the park that we're talking about, but he was attacked twice when he was younger. Both times were not actually his fault. One of the times he was actually on lead. So he literally done nothing wrong. And then the second time was at the beach, and again he had his own ball, was minding his own business, and then another dog came over to him and sort of pinned him down. But luckily it was no, you know, no injuries, no cuts or anything like that. It was sort of just all noise, but it obviously for us it's really scary, and it sounded a lot worse than it probably was. But it was sort of after that, was around the sort of 6-7 month mark as well, so that was when we were sort of a bit like, no, actually we don't want him thinking that it's okay to play with all other dogs and that he's allowed to just go over to every other dog he sees.
Yeah, so just to help other people that are listening to this thinking, actually I was going to go to the dog park, or they do. So from my point of view, with my own personal dogs, when they're puppies, I avoid other dogs like the plague. And that sounds weird, because we want to socialize our dogs to other dogs and people and environments. But for me, it's about letting your dog learn that dogs are quite a neutral experience. They're not just there to be played with. So they can, of course, see dogs, they can interact with dogs. But I personally don't like that constant fun with dogs all the time. What is your advice around, I suppose, socializing a young dog? What, in your experience, what did you do, but what would you possibly do different next time? How would you have that interaction instead of the dog park?
Yeah, so like you say, like now that is our point of view as well, is I just want him to ignore other dogs, which thankfully now he does really, but it's taken a lot of work to get to that point, especially from him being in the park and things like that when he was younger and playing with other dogs. We did used to do training and things like that when we were in the park. It wasn't all just run, let him off, and it wasn't all just carnage, but definitely for the next dog, we'll be doing a lot more on lead walks, not just letting them off to run around and sort of learn those bad habits, really.
And I think when you've got a young dog, it's really important to get your dog really focused on you as their handler, because you are their everything, and we need you to be their everything when they're outdoors. So let's talk about relationships that you have with your dog. So what do you guys like doing? What do you do on your days off and summer evenings? What sort of stuff do you do together?
So obviously we spend majority of our time at the beach. We go paddleboarding quite a lot, and Cooper comes paddleboarding with us. He spends a lot of the time jumping off and on because he likes swimming so much. We like to just sit and take a flask of tea and watch the sunset, things like that. You'll have to sit and have a chew or something with us.
Sounds like the perfect adventure companion. So now you've had a Labrador in your life. Is there going to be another Labrador at any point, do you reckon, in months or years to come? Or are you going to go back to owning a collie and a little dog?
I think I'm Labrador's forever now.
Good. Don't tell anyone, but I do think you're best in the world, if you've not figured that out already. Okay, so we've found out a bit about your life and kind of the lead up to where you're at now. So let's talk about training, because training has been an important thing for you. You've kind of said the word training a couple of times. So tell us a little bit about your routine. So whether that's daily routine, weekly, monthly, or just sporadically, what does your training look like now?
So now he's almost three, we don't necessarily have a set routine as such, but like every walk incorporates some sort of training, loose lead practice. We always do recoil practice, like sitting and waiting, things like that, letting him sniff treats out, recoiling off, things like that. So I don't have a set routine that I follow anymore now that he's sort of got everything sort of there. It's just sort of the odd bits as and when, and keeping it fresh in his brain, really.
So I think from what you said, it's almost like you've got the skill, and now it's just keep refining it, practicing and polishing it to make it really good.
Yeah.
And the way I liken this is, an Olympic athlete doesn't learn stuff once and then forget about it. They practice every single day, and that's important for dog training as well, just to remind him how amazing it is to do the stuff we ask him to do. What are your top five skills that you work on or have worked on with him?
Definitely loose leads. I mean, and that's still something that we work on all the time, especially when we get to places like the beach and things like that, because he's just so excited and so overstimulated. Recoil, settle. So that's settle with whether it just be in our house or in other people's houses. Waiting. So sitting and waiting, say if I need to go out of a gate somewhere to put a poo bag in the bin or something like that, him staying where I ask him to stay. And then just sort of being neutral to everyday life, really. So just being able to walk through a busy town centre without it being anxious or overwhelming or too overstimulating.
On that point, I think there's probably a lot of people listening to this that have got a 2.5-year-old boy dog and thinking, my dog is never going to be neutral in that kind of setting. Because a lot of them lose their mind when they become overstimulated. And I know full well that you will have put an awful lot of work into getting to the point where you are probably feeling like he's a bit more neutral. So give a bit of hope to some people. What have you done? How have you got to this point? And what continues to be your sort of daily grind with getting that neutrality?
I mean, he's still far from perfect. I don't feel like there is the perfect dog. We used to always want that, but thankfully we've sort of changed our mindset now, and it's, you don't want him to be perfect. You just want him to be well behaved. He is still very excitable, but that's what we love about him. It's just all about being consistent and just getting out there and practicing it every day. I mean, we live near a town, so just walking down into town, sitting down at each bench that you come across, watching people go past, watching dogs go past, cars, lorries, things like that, and just making it boring, really.
So what you're doing is you're teaching him the art of doing nothing, and that's so important. And we overlook it, when particularly when we've got puppies, we try and keep them entertained all the time, whether it's with chew toys or activities, but sometimes doing nothing is really good. And you mentioned like going into town, sitting on a park bench and doing nothing. And when you first start that, your dog looks at you like you're a bit silly, because, you know, what are we doing? What are we meant to be doing? But it really does help. And dogs can be calm and neutral in your living room at home, because they know every square inch of your carpet, they know what it smells like, they know what the distractions are. But there's so much to confuse a dog in a town centre. So they've just got to keep getting exposed to it in nice, gentle stages where they're really happy with it, until that becomes, you know, normal or normal-ish. Would you say you've seen gradual bits of improvement as you've been doing it?
Yeah, I mean, compared to when we first started it, he is like a different dog now. I mean, we couldn't even sit down on a bench for 30 seconds without him getting frustrated and just barking at us, because he is such a high energy dog. He just wants to be doing stuff and looking. He would just stand there looking at me like, what do you want me to do now? What do you want me to do now? And it was like, actually nothing. Just so we would just ignore the barking when he was quiet, give him treats, and then wait until he'd been quiet for, you know, so many seconds, and then we'd get up, move on to the next bench. And it was a long process, and sometimes you felt like an idiot, especially if people are looking at you whilst your dog is just barking at you for sitting on a bench. But it works. It's taken us a long time, but yeah, it's just the consistency, really.
Absolutely. And you've mentioned about giving him food or treats when he's doing good stuff. So let's talk about the type of training that you've done with him. Lots of people will subscribe to different training methods. So it could be food-based reward training, positive reinforcement, balance training. Do you have a particular view of what's worked for you? Is there a particular type of training method that has been better than others for you?
I don't really like to label training as such, because this is another thing that I've sort of learned through Instagram, is that it's not really one shoe fits all. It's very much dependent on you and your dog and your situation. I would say we use balance training majority of the time. It's reward based, so he's always getting treats and bits of his food and things like that. But sometimes, this is when going back when he was quite young, he would jump up at the kitchen sides all the time. It was very annoying, but he is a Labrador, so anything about food he will jump at. So we would guide him out of the kitchen, put him on a timeout, just shut him out for a minute, let him back in, and then when he was just sniffing but all 4 feet were on the floor, then we'd treat him. If he jumped up again, he would go get led out of the kitchen again. So it's not a punishment as such. Yeah. I do think they need to know when they're doing something wrong.
I totally agree with that. I think most Labradors out there love routine. They love boundaries and rules, and they like that because they want to know where they stand. They want to know what's good and what's bad. So every dog will be different, and the approach that we take should be different for each individual dog. But it is really interesting that, you know, things like timeouts worked particularly well for him. And I guess, well, I'm making an assumption here. Do you feel that he copes quite well with that sort of negative side of it, in the sense that he appreciates, because he knows, actually, I shouldn't be doing that, because you've made it clear to him with those rules?
Yeah, I guess so, because it was very rare that we'd have to put him on two timeouts. There's glass in our kitchen door, so he could still see into the kitchen, and he would just stand there at the door the whole time, looking quite sad. But as soon as he came back in, you know, he'd come and sort of stretch as high as he could for a sniff. But yeah, it was very rare that he'd jump up again. There was no telling off or...
So I think probably what like he learned was that his undesirable behaviour resulted in a consequence, which maybe he didn't want to repeat multiple times over. So that's kind of how we learnt that particular process. And I mean, thanks for sharing that you kind of do that sort of more balanced approach, because that's useful, because I do think people feel like they're put in certain pens when it comes to training. And sometimes they don't want to say that they do a certain thing because public opinion might suggest that they've got to do something else. So on that point, have you found that other people, whether that's people you know or on social media, have had quite strong opinions on the type of training that you should do? And have you had people telling you you're doing it wrong and, you know, putting their opinion upon you?
Yes, I have. I mean, we've had a few comments from an old, there was one particular old man who lives around the corner doing loose lead walk. He was still fairly young, so it was constant stopping and starting and turning around and not really actually getting anywhere with our walk. I can't remember what he actually said, but he basically was saying I needed to just tell him off and drag him back to the place I wanted him to walk. And I was just like, no, he's my dog. I will teach him. If I want to look like a Wally walking up and down and turning around and going backwards and forwards, then I will. On Instagram, we've had a few messages, nothing majorly negative, but it's more so people just giving their opinion when it's not necessarily wanted, especially when I used to share a lot about when he was suffering with quite bad anxiety and we were working with a behaviorist at the time. I had a few messages then because I did share quite a lot of it on there, and the amount of messages that I was having from other Labrador owners saying that their dog was the same, it was crazy. So it's a common thing. I think labs are quite sensitive souls, but a lot of people don't necessarily know how to deal with it or want to speak about it either because of those opinions of other people.
Generic training or generic advice or generic approaches can be quite harming to the dog training world. We can't treat every dog as just being the same as the next dog or the dog that lives next door. And also the rules that you have in your house, the lifestyle that you want to lead with your dog will be very different from someone else. So I encourage you for the rest of Cooper's life and anyone else listening, it's kind of your dog, your lifestyle, your rules. And it's got to be what works for you, because it will be different from what someone else says, but they're not living your life. So you've got to do what sits right for you. So realities then, we've spoken about realities of training, but has having him in your life been what you expected, or have you had a totally, totally different experience for the last 2.5 years?
Yes and no. Because of lockdown, we couldn't go into cafes and restaurants, pubs, things like that. So that's something that he missed in his, you know, the main sort of socialization stage. So that can be a struggle still. He can be quite wary around strangers still. So as he's neutral in the majority of places, but it's inside places like restaurants, cafes, things like that, because of his negative experiences he had at his old vet's practice.
Sorry, just to cut you off there, you said about lockdown. Do you think lockdown impacted on the stuff that came in the following months? So do you think he was adversely affected by the fact you were locked down when he was in the puppy stage?
Yeah, massively. I think it had a huge impact.
In what sense?
So like I said, so we couldn't go into the vets with him. Mm. We used to just have to hand him over. So then in that, we couldn't then just go and let him have a sniff around, get some treats, do that sort of training with him. It was always, he was only going in for, you know, to be actually be seen, to be touched, whatever it was. We couldn't have people around our house. So strangers coming into the house now can still be a struggle. Whenever we did see friends and their dog, it was always, you know, for an hour in someone's back garden. So he struggled with like settling around other dogs, because whenever we did see other dogs, it was just for a play, you know, in a chat, cup of tea, whatever, in the garden before going back home again. So I do think it's impacted on him quite a lot. And only now, really, that he's almost 3, are we seeing the sort of basic things like just being able to chill around other dogs, probably about a year ago now, really, he could start doing that. But we never thought he'd be able to just have a little play and then snooze, because he was just so excited all the time.
What caused the negativity at the vets? So you mentioned that he kind of struggles at the vets. Was there a particular thing that happened, or was it just the fact he was parted from you and taken off to be poked and prodded, that kind of stuff?
He had three really quite intrusive consultations. It was probably in around 4 weeks. So there was three. There was one for his eye. He had conjunctivitis. So obviously that was quite up close and personal in his face. I can't even remember what the other two were. I think it was for his jabs, his yearly jabs. And then the other one was for something on his paw. So it was three things that were all really up in his face and quite up close and personal. The vets that we were at just didn't really, they didn't give him the time that he needed, and they weren't very patient. They were very much sort of get him in, get the job done, get him out sort of thing, whereas he would have been a lot better if he could go in, have a little sniff, have a few treats, and then get whatever done.
So how have you managed to kind of tackle that? Is he still at the same vets? Have you taken a different approach just to try and make that a little bit better for him?
No, we're not at the same vets. We swap practice now, and they are amazing. When we go in for sniffs and treats and just, you know, the odd training visit, they'll take him off around the back. They'll take him into all the different rooms. They're just really patient with him. When we book appointments, whenever he does need to go in for whatever reason, they'll give us a double appointment. So he has got that extra time to just get in there and calm down before they go prodding and poking.
And there are a lot of anxious and reactive dogs out there. And I think as the owner of an anxious or reactive dog, you often feel like you're the only one that's going through it. You're not. And it's when you go to the sort of the really good vets like that, that you probably appreciate that they see many, many dogs very similar every week. So it's good that they've got that understanding. So you've had some real challenges with lockdowns, vets and things like that. What are some of the other frustrations about having a Labrador in your life? I'm sure there's more good than bad, but for those people that are considering a Labrador as a first pet, what would you say your biggest frustration is?
Well, now just the hair. It's just constant, having to hoover all the time. But other than that, it's just puppyhood is very, very hard.
It is. It's really tough. And you get through puppyhood and you're like, yep, smashed it, done it. We're out of puppyhood. And then you hit adolescence, right? Okay. Yep. That's when it gets really fun.
That's even worse.
There are three distinct stages of having a Labrador. You've got puppy, adolescent, and then finally adult. And it can seem like a really long road, but I would suggest you're probably well on your way of that road now. We'll talk about adolescence in a minute and, you know, the things that come with that. But be a bit self-critical now. So what do you think your biggest dog-related failure has been? And what did you take away from it? What did you learn from it? Because we all learn things when we train our dogs. So was there any standout moments with Cooper?
Yes. So it was because of where we live, we're always at the beach. So we always had him on a long line, practicing his recall, things like that. Because his recall was always really good from quite early on. I mean, it's one of the things we started training from like day one. We used to get to places and let him off lead sort of pretty much straight away. But obviously, which is fine for most places, but some places where he needs to be on lead, he used to really struggle, like getting out the car. As soon as he sees the car, and he loves the car because he always goes nice places in the car. So whenever we pull up anywhere, he's always like ready and raring to go, which obviously then leads to him pulling on the lead. But it's just because we used to always let him off straight away. So we're still battling that now. It's breaking down that excitement and making him walk nicely on the lead before he gets let off.
So let's look at how we can use your experiences to help other people now. So what do you think is the biggest misunderstanding about owning specifically a working line Labrador? And I suspect most people that haven't owned a Labrador before probably think that all Labradors are slightly overweight and they just plod along behind their human and sleep on the sofa and all that kind of really sedate stuff. But it's a different reality, right? How have you, how have you found it?
Yes, they need a lot of stimulation, mental stimulation. So a lot, lots of enrichment, especially when they're younger, and you can't just take them for really long walks because of their joints and things. Lots of sniffy games, lots of training, lots of just work in that brain because they really do need it. They're not just going to go for a trot around the block and then be happy to sleep for the rest of the day. They need a lot of stimulation.
Absolutely. It almost seems like a constant thing in the early stages. It's amazing how much focus and attention they need and deserve from us. Has it changed from puppyhood to adulthood? Did you find that he needed more attention, more stimulation as he got into that teenage phase?
Yes. So he sort of, we hit about like 13, 14 months and we sort of were thinking, right, okay, we're good now. The training seems to have sunk in. You know, he's not a little piranha anymore. But then you hit adolescence and then it's just the puppy days all over again, but 10 times worse. And they're also 10 times bigger. So you can't just pick them up and pop them on the timeout because they're now very big. I think, yeah, they're probably worse. Adolescence is definitely worse than puppyhood. Yeah. And I don't think we were prepared for that.
And I think it's always worse because you know that, you know, 2 days ago they had it, they got it nailed. And then all of a sudden it's like they forgot everything you told them. And it's tough for us humans when we've got a teenage dog, but it's also really tough for the dog because emotions, hormones, brains are telling them to do lots of weird and wonderful stuff. So with him being a boy, did you notice that he suddenly became, you know, motivated by his nuts and testosterone?
Yes, massively. I think we got to about 15 months and he just decided he would like to hump everything, every dog, male or female, his bed, me, he even tried it with, and it was just constant. We tried so many different things. He was just so fueled by testosterone. There was like no getting through to him. So that was when we went for the implant, so the chemical castration.
So tell us about chemical castration. So some people will never have heard about it before. So how did you find out about it? What conversations did you have with your vet? And I suppose what advice did your vet give you?
So we found out about it from another Fox Red owner whose dog had had the implant put in. He was having the same issues pretty much as Cooper. And because Cooper was and could be slightly anxious in some situations, we didn't just want to go straight for the chop because obviously that can make them worse. So the implant stays there we got the 6-month one, really, really quick procedure. It's just a quick injection and it's in their neck then. It takes a few weeks to see any of the side effects for it to sort of kick in. And then once it's kicked in at about 6 weeks, it lasts 6 months and then it'll just dissolve. So you don't have to get it taken out or anything like that.
Did you notice any obvious effects, whether it was very quickly or after 6 weeks? Did you notice a difference?
Yes. So after about 2 weeks, I think it was, he just seemed to calm down. Like on the evening, he wasn't having that stupid like witching hour before he settled, where they were just zooming around being naughty, really. So that had stopped after about 2 weeks, and then slowly, like 3-4 weeks, like the humping was stopping. And then after that 6 weeks, it was sort of like he just seemed to have, all the testosterone seemed to have gone and he was just back to listening and just doing exactly what, as we were saying, all the training was back. Yeah, it was like a switch, really. And he was just back to being, you know, good boy, and calmed him down as well.
So as that started to wear off, so we're kind of looking around the 6-month point, did you notice that it went, that it deteriorated again, or did he kind of stick at that nice, calm, steady level?
Yeah, so we opted for the 6-month implant, but it actually lasted about a year. I don't know how, but it just obviously did. And then one day we took him for a walk and it was literally like a switch had been flicked again the opposite way. And I mean, this was, he was over two by this point. And he just went running off on the beach to another dog and just started humping it. And we were literally like, oh my God, we were so embarrassed. We were like, what is he doing? And then from that walk, then it was every walk. It was he was back on lead all the time, back on his long line. He was just not listening again. He was just constantly trying to hump other dogs. He even had a little scrap on one walk with another intact male, which was just really not like him. We'd never seen that before. And then it was pretty much that made us decide that, you know, he can't have balls, really. So then we went for the chop.
Okay. So you went for the full procedure there, yeah?
Yes.
Okay. And what age was he when you had that done?
Christmas time. So like 2.5.
Okay.
Just under 2.5.
And are you seeing that he's gone back to that stage where he was as the chemical implant was in full force? Has he gone back to, you know, the calm, steady Cooper?
Yeah. Yeah. He's literally, I don't want to say perfect because he isn't perfect, but as much as we would want him to be perfect, yeah. He, you know, he's calm around on dogs. He's, the humping stopped. He's great.
Really difficult question now, but knowing what you know now, having tried the chemical and the full procedure and, you know, the benefit of hindsight, if you were reliving your time again, what would you get done and at what age?
I think I would still go for the implant, like the chemical castration, just because it's obviously reversible. So it's good to be able to see how it's going to change your dog and how it's going to affect your dog before you actually get it done permanently. I think I'd do that even if the next dog wasn't, you know, to signs of anxiety, things like that, just for that peace of mind, really. Because I mean, once you chop them off, you can't stick them back on.
And I'm going to ask you to give one kind of key bit of advice to Labrador owners, but I want to split that question into two parts. So I'm going to start off with, what advice would you give to the owner of a adolescent male Labrador?
Take a deep breath for one and just be really consistent. Really strip back your training back to like your real basics, like as if from day one, like you brought them home. Don't let them just create bad habits and teach themselves bad habits. So back on the long line, all constant training and just being really consistent with it, because eventually when they come out of adolescence, it is still there. It's just fighting that testosterone.
Okay, so same question, but to a new Labrador owner. So someone that's just bought home an 8-week old puppy, what are you going to advise them? What's your one key bit of advice?
Really just be consistent. I'd start training and exposure to everyday life from day one, really. And also just enjoy it, because they grow up very, very quickly. Take as many photos and videos as possible, because I'm always looking at all of Cooper's puppy photos and videos now. It's just, although he's almost three, it's like it feels like yesterday that we brought him home, but also feels like we've had him forever. Especially if it's your first puppy, it can be quite surreal, and also not knowing where to start and things like that.
I think trying to enjoy it as much as possible is really important as well, because you said, like, you know, 3 years down the line you look back at pictures and sometimes we forget to really cherish that moment and enjoy it, because we're so caught up in, are we doing the right thing at the right time, how do we cope with it? So enjoy it as much as possible. Could you imagine having never done any training with Cooper, so just kind of decided to wing it and just hope for the best? Would you see that would be a good outcome for you?
No, I wouldn't even want to imagine it. I mean, well, you've seen him in his puppy days from his puppy training. He wasn't easy. He was an absolute little psycho with very, very sharp teeth. And like even our family and things, when he was younger and we used to take him around other people's houses and stuff, they'd say to us, like, imagine if you hadn't done as much with him. Imagine if you'd done nothing with him. Like, he would just, he'd be like feral.
Yeah, I mean, you've worked his brain, you've worked his body hard. And I think, you know, if you don't do that with a dog, they'll still learn, but they're more likely to learn bad habits. So they'll always learn, but we want to keep them focused on the good stuff. And I think that's what you've done. You know, you've tried your very best to keep him on the straight and narrow and following the path that you want him to do. Prior to asking that question, you spoke about taking lots of videos of your dog, right? And photos to cherish those good moments. And TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, they're all pretty good resources. And I know that Cooper has his own social media accounts, probably helped out by you quite a little bit, I would have thought. Has that been a useful resource for you? Have you kind of found that as like a community that you can go to seek advice, support and training help?
Yeah, I've absolutely loved having his Instagram. We've actually made genuine friends through that, who we meet up with quite regularly. And like I say, I've learned a lot from it as well. Going into puppyhood, like being a first-time puppy owner, you sort of, you know, you read the basics and you think you know what you're doing, but a lot of it comes down to experience and what works and what doesn't work for you and your dog, really. And I think Instagram's helped me a lot. It can obviously be a negative place sometimes, but on the most, it's been quite helpful for us. And like I say, I've met people and businesses through there who I absolutely love now.
Yeah, tell us a bit about that, because I know that the handsome young man has got himself some ambassador roles for some businesses out there. So tell us a little bit about Cooper's ambassador roles, what he does, and a little bit about the people that you represent.
So his first ambassador role that he got was with Twiggy Tags. So they sell dog adventure gear, basically. So your leads, harnesses, collars, adventure mats, things like that. We absolutely love Twiggy Tags. It's all he wears. It's just fab because obviously he is a big dog, but it's all adventure ready. It's all strength tested. It's, you know, it looks good as well as being real good quality and really well-made equipment and things.
What is his or what's your favourite Twiggy Tags product?
That's really, really hard question.
Okay. So not what's your favourite. What should every new Labrador owner go to Twiggy Tags and get and why?
So definitely the close control lead. So it's the lead with the added handle at the bottom of it. So it's ideal for, you know, your loose lead training. Also when you're walking around and you need to just get them close, you know, by the road, things like that. So yeah, definitely the close control lead.
Okay. And where can people go to get that? And do they have to quote a particular Cooper code to say that they've been referred by you?
So just twiggytags.co.uk. There's also a lot of wholesalers now. And you can use code Cooper10 to save.
So Cooper10 gets you a bit of discount there. That's good. Who else? Because there's some other people, isn't there, that you're repping for?
Yes, so he also reps for Puppy Chops Pet Shop. So they sell all your natural chews and treats, but also everything you need for enrichment. So like Kongs, Topples, Licky Mats, all your supplements as well, things like that.
And what's his favourite product from them?
He's a Labrador, so he loves all of the treats pretty much. But I would choose the Bolly Rolls because they aren't too stinky and they last him a good hour, which is mega because he is a power chewer.
Okay, so if people had a Labrador, they wanted to go to a coffee shop, a bully roll would be a good option. So where can people go to get those from, and do they need to give an ambassador code?
So you can find them on Instagram and they share lots of different recipes and things like that. You can go to puppychopspetshop.co.uk and use code Cooper. It's just Cooper for that one.
Okay, good stuff. And I know enrichment is a big part of your and Cooper's life. So there's someone else that you rep for that does some enrichment stuff. So like snuffle mat type things, is that right?
Yeah, so Cub Kit and Co. Chloe Han makes all of their snuffle balls and snuffle mats and snuffle rolls. And they're all really dense as well, which what Cooper needs because he just, he'll complete his normal snuffle mat in seconds.
Okay, so for someone that's never heard of a snuffle mat, what are the benefits of it that you have found with Cooper?
So it really calms him down. So it's good after if you've been out for a walk where they've been playing with other dogs, been chasing their ball, things like that. It's just good mental enrichment as well. So it gets his brain working, it gets his nose working. I think I read somewhere that I don't know how true it is, but something like, I think it's 15 minutes of sniffing equates to an hour of like walking.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So a good sniff, but particularly a sniff where they have to work their brain as well, is more tiring for a lot of dogs than just kind of, you know, walk around the block or a run around the field, because it's working different senses. It's getting the brain working. So whether that's snuffle mats or scent detection, get your dog working, it's going to be much better. And I think that's where snuffle mats can be kind of a nice bridge between mental and physical exercise. So Cubkit and Co, tell us where people can go for those. And again, do you have any ambassador codes that people can use?
So Cubkit and Co is on Etsy. So they've got their own Etsy shop and it's Cooper10 for there.
Okay, perfect. Good stuff. So some good businesses there that people can check out and hopefully save a little bit of money getting those amazing products. We've spoken about Instagram, so give Cooper a shout out. Where can people go on Instagram and TikTok to find him and admire him?
So he's cooper.onthecoastline,
and that's on both platforms, is it, Instagram and TikTok?
Yeah, Instagram and TikTok.
Okay, fabulous. One final thing that I want to ask you, so what would your final message or piece of advice be to any listener that's kind of tuned into this, that's finding it just a bit of a challenge, whether that's puppy, adult, adolescents, what are you going to say to them?
Keep going and it does get better. If you put the work in, you do see the benefits eventually.
Yeah, absolutely. And I kind of echo that, keep going, it gets better. But also make sure whatever you're keeping going doing, it's the right thing. So don't be afraid to seek help, support, guidance and advice, whether that's from us here at Tales of Success or Sophie and Cooper on Instagram, or you know, someone that's been there, done it, got the t-shirt, that can give you that support and advice that you need. Sophie, that's brilliant. That's been really useful to hear about some of the challenges you've faced and to hear about Cooper, and of course hopefully people will check you out on Instagram and also use those amazing ambassador codes that you've given us. So thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Find out more by checking out talesofsuccess.com or search at Tales Success on your social channels.